from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today on the show, we're going to have a mailbag episode, and this is perfect timing for a mailbag, because I'm going to be able to say all the kind of exciting new stuff that's happening to that you guys are curious about anyways, and generally I think it's going to be a positive show, and that's an exciting thing, right? Because I think that sometimes I got shows where I'm really dark and broody, and other shows I'm inquisitive, and I think this one's going to be I'm positive and yet still terrified.
Well, you know, people tune in to listen to you complain, but they like to hear you complain about organized religion
about my own life.
Yeah.
This is not the soapbox for your life, Jacob. All right. Lesson learned. 'Tis not a soapbox. But with that in mind, I guess you guys sometimes are curious about what's going on, maybe behind the scenes or whatever, which is why we do these mailbag episodes. So hopefully you went to the site and you put in your questions, because we gave it plenty of time. And if you didn't, and if you're like, oh, I would have liked to ask a question, go visit the site more. These things are happening more often. Have you noticed there's been more shows, guys? This is all
I've noticed that there's been more like comments and everything else. You got a nice little community growing there. I enjoy checking out everybody's thoughts on all the articles.
Well, I've been trying to do a much better job at actually writing the right kinds of articles, because now that really sort of like we, you know, with the Save Good Atheist campaign culminating into this book, Bible Stories, the Kickstarter campaign now online and up and running, and there'll be notes for that all over the place, and we'll be reminding you where to go and why you guys should fucking participate in that, but that more on that later. But yeah, like the forward momentum of all of that, you know, part of it is like, yeah, the website's going to, you know, has to be a little bit more interesting, and there's going to be more contribution from, you know, from me, from Carissa wants to post stuff. Jeff wants to post stuff now. So there might even just be like tons of links being thrown up. Like I kind of want Good Atheist to be a place where people can still can come and just check out like, hey, what's happening in the scene that people are interested in? That's fucking awesome. No.
This does sound pretty good. Didn't you mention something about you're going to start a Tumblr and give me access to it?
Yeah, exactly. So what? Basically, my idea is that you and all the co-hosts have their own Tumblrs, which are their own separate feeds on the site. So anything that you guys spot that you find is interesting, like Jeff definitely, he sends me stuff on Gay Rights Issue all the time that sometimes I don't write or post about. And I just figure, like, don't send me the link, man. Send the link to everybody else. And I just, you know, like I figured too that there are lots of people that are constantly asking me, hey, when's the next time Jeff is on, or when is the next time that Ryan is on or Chris is on? So now that I've mixed it up as much as I have, there are people that like have certain preferences for shows. So I'd like very much even people's feeds, like you guys' feeds, to actually feature the shows that you co-host as well, so that everybody can kind of hone in on, say, the Ryan-y goodness.
It is quite good.
There have been people that have sent me messages that have said that they miss you tremendously. So, you know, I hope you appreciate being loved.
Oh, I love being loved. It's great. And I kind of double whammied them because I'm not doing my Ultimate Fighting podcast anymore. So everybody that really liked me, they're getting doubly starved.
Oh, man. Weren't you teasing someone with the idea? I seem to recall. Like, are you serious about that? Are you going to try to do a podcast?
Well, it's probably going to come back. It's like a once-a-month, two-hour type show, which will be part like, not interview, but like talking with somebody interesting from the scene. I'll have one of the other writers from the site come on and do like we'll talk about an upcoming event, but you know the week by week grind is a bit much. I've been doing it for 5 years, and you know just for the joy of podcasting, well,
yeah, there's only so many. You're running on fumes here.
I'll save my podcasting goodness overall for when you need me.
Well, great. Well, because here's the great thing too, with everybody doubling up on co-hosting the shows, We can always make sure that, you know, when we have a few days where we're not doing the show together, they're always better. Did you notice that? Like when we were doing the grind, it just kind of felt grindy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, generally, when we were doing like two a week, they'd end up being about 30 minutes apiece. And when I was down to only doing it once every couple, you know, well, once every week or two, they shoot up to 90 minutes. So especially now that we're far apart and this is like one of our few chances to talk to each other, it just naturally gets a little bit longer.
It gets a little bit more talky. It's like, why don't you settle down? You're in for a long show because we're going to take our time with these questions. And you know, here's another beauty behind this whole idea of labeling stuff better. Because I know that people who listen to mailbags, they're going to be specific fans, you know. Not everyone has to listen to every fucking show. There are going to be people who like some shows better than others. Like, because I'm mixing up more interviews, like, for instance, I think some people are really liking the interviews. Some people, not so much. They're like, I just want some casual banter. I want you guys fucking around. And that's fine. You know, like, I want to mix it up enough that in any given month, you're going to get one of those fixes. Either it's a long fucking mailbag show where we answer fan questions, and that's the feel, yo. It's a fan service show, so however many fans are, that's how many download and listen to it, and that's how many care. And, like, the interview shows, or the Ryan shows, or the Carissa shows, all that gets put into a way that just, I don't know, I guess makes browsing the content a bit easier, because there's a lot of it now, you know? I can't even go through and make corrections without it taking me all day. And that's just corrections to stuff. I can't even imagine listening to it. Holy shit, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, every time you tell me your stupid plans to, like, go through every show we've ever done and do some kind of crazy annotations or whatever else like that, I'm just like, yeah, have fun with that.
Whatever. Well, you know, I'm constantly surveying people who listen to the show, asking them, hey, would you like this? Would you like that? And unless the response is overwhelmingly, holy shit, I want that, I'm not going to do it anymore. I have plenty of ideas. That's all good, but I think that Ryan will testify that that's kind of my biggest problem, actually. Too many ideas.
Yep. But speaking of ideas, before we get into this mailbag, you mentioned a Kickstarter. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, because it has been although it wasn't asked in the mailbag, it's asked of me all the time. They were asking me, when's the book coming out? What's going on with that? Well, here's the great thing. So I started a Kickstarter account. If you don't know what that is, get out of your cave, but, you know, join the rest of humanity, because this is a big deal. Kickstarter is awesome. It's a place where people put up projects, and there's a kind of semi-donation slash product selling, if you want.
It's semi-investment.
Semi-investment, exactly. So it's people who go up, everyday people saying, I have an idea for a project, and they just fucking lay it out there, and people can support it or not. And the cool thing about it, too, is that the amount that you ask for is going to be only taken off people's cards if you reach the number. So if I say I need 10 grand, which is how much I'm asking for the book, but we only reach like $9,999, we don't get it. Your card doesn't get charged, you know, and then that's it. Project fail. And in a sense, that's kind of that's to make sure that the project has like this minimum amount. Because you can imagine the risk that a person would have to take saying like, well, why should I donate? I don't know if my money's going to go anywhere. Well, Kickstarter figured out a way around that, which is fucking clever. And that's what I want to utilize because I think 10 grand is how much I need to make it work. But here's the cool thing about what we're offering, because this is not just like, you know, every project I do, I always want to try to be clever and shit. That's my whole thing. So I'm offering a whole bunch of different options, right? There's an option just for the ebook, which is 10 bucks. And let me tell you something. I'm sure most of the people out there are going to probably want that. Like, I know there's tons of people that are like, I want the ebook. There's a $10 option for you guys. There's going to be like a $25 version for, you know, the audiobook ebook version, which is, kind of like a long extended podcast, really, if you think about it. I don't know how many hours an ebook is. How many hours is an ebook, by the way?
I don't know. If it's like a Stephen King one, then it's like 10,000 CDs.
Okay, well, it hopefully won't be that much. I figure probably 9 hours of podcasts, if read properly. I guess it really depends on how quickly I read it. I'm not the best reader sometimes, so it might take a few takes.
Yeah, maybe if people donate like $500, you'll promise not to read it yourself.
Yeah, why don't you fuck off? Everybody wants me to read it. They were actually asking because, you know, there's a common thing where the authors don't always get to read their books, which I think is just silly. This thing is just awful. Like, oh, I wrote it, but a British guy had to read it to make it legit.
I had gotten this Carl Sagan audiobook, and he only reads the first three chapters, and then it switches to some other guy. And I was like, why would you ever want to listen to someone else read Carl Sagan's work?
Yeah, that's kind of odd. I guess he died or something. Yeah, there was that thing. That thing that happened where he died.
He can read it from heaven.
He sure can, buddy. You're going to get to meet Carl Sagan in hell. I mean, heaven.
If they can make like a holographic Tupac, they must be able to do the Carl Sagan bot.
Oh God, you know they're someone's gonna do that. They're gonna Tupac fucking Carl Sagan.
I don't understand why not. I mean, science invented holograms, so why can't we, you know, have Carl Sagan show up at atheist conventions? It'll be great because it like kills all these birds with one stone. You don't have to worry about holographic Carl Sagan, you know, sexually harassing any of the women at the conferences.
Can I just sort of go on a tangent here and say that as a piece of advice for any of you listening to the show that want to be famous or, you know, do great things, keep in mind that someone may make a holographic projection of you and prostitute you in the future. I just want to put that out there. Fame, is it really all it's cracked up to be? Do you want your holographic image essentially being raped for all time?
I'm down with it. It's cool.
You're not down with it at all. You always avoid the spotlight. How many times did we try to do a TV show thing and you're like, I don't want to be in front of a camera? You don't want fame. And imagine now you have like 10,000 holographic versions of you floating around.
But I'm dead, so who cares? I mean, after I'm dead, anything can happen. They could like, you know, unearth all of the every single horrible thing I ever did in my life that was previously a secret. It wouldn't really matter because I've already left this mortal coil.
Yeah, but you know what? Okay, let me tell you why. Because you want a legacy. And you know what a legacy is? A legacy is the same driving force that makes a fucking salmon swim upstream and kill themselves just to reproduce. It's to be able to leave a lineage that makes it through and carries on. And let me tell you something. I think that in the ideas that you leave behind, you should have the same fucking notion. Like, I don't even know if I want kids. So at the very fucking least, I should at least have a legacy of something that passes on. But I don't want it to be holographically raped, is all I'm saying.
I'm just saying that I've done all of the raping already myself through hundreds of hours of podcasts and ignorant opinions and terrible comments. Nothing really that anybody else can do that I haven't already done
myself.
You've
raped knowledge is what you have done. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. But anyways, back to the book. So you're saying you're going to read it.
That's the $25 version. There's also going to be one version that's $60, which will be like the signed soft cover audiobook. And then there's actually one that's like, I figure there's a couple people out there that probably want to give it as a gift to people. So there's going to be a couple of those, like you get a bunch of books so you can hand it out as gifts and shit like that. Because it's going to come out, the book is going to come out August of 2013. But here's the cool part of the book and why you'd probably want to have one of those packages where you can have a bunch of multiple ones is because if you get like the deluxe packages starting at like about $250 and up, you can get your face in the book. That's cool, right?
It is pretty cool. It is pretty cool. Will you be able to promise that they're going to be happy with their image, a.k.a. how I was not happy with any of your drawings of me? I was like, the thing about Jake is that he's never been able to draw my face at all. He always gets it wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong.
I always get it wrong, but the problem is that you don't allow me to look at you long enough to get a good...
I only lift my paper bag for 5 minutes, and then I'm like, whoop, back down.
Very self-conscious man. So, and plus, here's the problem that I always had, too, is because we had glasses, similar fucking haircuts. So when you're just trying to draw cartoon versions, which is what I mostly always tried to draw, I don't have a lot to work with to separate you and me. It's sort of like it's a tragedy, really.
Just increase the head fatness by like 30% and decrease the eyebrow hair by about 40%.
Yeah, but I can't do that anymore because I think I've augmented in fat percent by like 7 or 10. So now it's
getting
fatter? I'm getting fatter, sir. Definitely, definitely happening. You know, one of the things that I'm hoping to do with the success of the pre-orders is actually get a gym membership. Because I was hopeful that there was going to be a gym here in this building where we live, but it is awful. It's like one of those really cheap machines kind of thing. You don't want to use one of those. It sucks.
Sounds like somebody's making excuses.
Look, I used to be a professional gymnotter. You know, I used to go all the time. I just know what I like. You know? It's not asking too much to just not have rusty equipment. That's all. Rusty, yeah. Crappy equipment. That's right near a pool where you have to smell chlorine. I can't tell you how crappy this gym is.
Well, I'm sure anybody that donates that much money, and you'll take the time to get them right. You'll ask them for a couple of pictures. You'll be able to like kind of sketch it out and be like, here you go, and you know, get it all locked up before you submit it.
Here's the cool thing too, is that if the book does really, really well, because it could. I mean, Kickstarter accounts sometimes have done like unfucking phenomenally well. There's that chance. And if it does really do phenomenally well, then I'm going to do a book tour. And, you know, pretty much, my hope is going to the places where most of the high-end people who bought it purchased it, so I could actually kind of have, like, a big party, and they could come and get it in person, because that would be awesome. That would be pretty wicked.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like the Amanda Palmer way of touring.
Amanda Palmer?
She's a musician that used Kickstarter. Look her up. She basically raised, I don't know how many, like hundreds of thousands of dollars to put together an entire tour and album and art show and everything else like that. And the whole thing is basically the money comes in and it's all being spent on product and on just like awesome crap for all the fans.
Well, there was a couple of other cool things I'm going to do if it does phenomenally well too. One of them is the website redesign, which... You know, like I've talked about all the time and I've tried to do redesigns, but at the end of the day, when you don't have a lot of money and you do things yourself, you don't get what you want. It's compromised fucking city. I don't want compromised city anymore. I want sort of like what you want, Ville. That's what I want.
Yeah, it's someone who knows what they're doing, Ville.
Yeah, no, exactly. Someone who has the keys to all these little ideas that you have. So like, I'd love to make this a reality. Can you do it, Mr. Master of the Internet? Because I suck.
Yeah, I mean, your girlfriend's an impressive web designer, but she like does it through sheer force of will. She gives birth to like new websites. It just through like it just hunkering
sheer
down
determination. Like, I don't have that anymore. I mean, I think I did in the early days of trying to make websites and stuff like that, but no more.
Well, the truth of the matter is that certain people are good at certain things, and certain people have kind of that glass ceiling that they can't get through. And us, I think it was awesome that we were around for, like, the birth of computer programming, and we learned BASIC and everything else like that. But at this point now, it's just a bit too complicated for our shriveled old brains to be able to do anything with anymore.
I don't get it. You know, here's what's actually, there's a funny story too, where Carissa was trying to learn some After Effects stuff, which will be seen. You'll see some of the influences of that in the video on Kickstarter, which is pretty awesome, which is also kind of like tantalizing you with the prospect of a show, which will hopefully be happening in a few months. But when she's learning After Effects, she's going through YouTube tutorials, and one of the YouTube tutorials is like a 12-year-old kid. And you're just like, you know, at this point, you've out of the mouths of babes come lessons of how to use programs.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I dig that kind of stuff.
It is kind of, like you realize now that there are some kids that handed the keys of the Library of fucking Alexandria on crack are getting it done in a way that, yeah, that's going to leave us, you know, pretty much, it's like smoking craters. We'll go to them and be like, can you hook me to your weird holographic hellhole where I'm going to be prostituted for my whole life? Hook me up. All right, let's get to some mailbag questions before everybody goes apeshit and be like, all right, we heard your super mega pitch for the book. And we're going to go there, and we're going to buy, and we're going to also like it so that everybody else hears about it. Very important, fucking folks. And then they're like, we know what to do. Ta-da! And now for the crack, where we answer your mailbag questions. Let's do it.
Okay, Becky asks, if another atheist podcaster wanted to interview you, would you do it?
I've been trying to get myself on other atheist podcasts. You know what? No one's ever asked me. Do you know how many times I get emailed by other fellow atheist bloggers? Yeah, it doesn't happen. I don't get communicated with. I don't know if I'm a pariah. Maybe I've said some bad things. I probably have, but I'm assuming no one's really listening. So
I think we're just kind of in a corner. It's like we're not hugely a part of the atheism scene in a conventional sense. We have our little corner. And it exists, and we have our group of people who like it. But other than that, it's not like we're tied in. We're not part of that atheism blogging community. It's not like Fringula talks about what we do and Friendly Atheist involves us in stuff or anything else like that. We're off to the side.
Well, we have now, there is someone who writes for Friendly Atheist. Jessica Blumke, and she has been throwing back some love at us. And the reason is because she actually is a fan of the show. And she does follow the Facebook fan page, something like that. And I put so much fucking news on that I think that actually a lot of the times the news she's reporting actually comes from the Facebook fan page, which is pretty fucking active. But, you know, I was actually talking to her earlier today because one of the things that I was mentioning is that it's not really the atheist blogosphere is not really a community. It's not a community because not everyone can share properly the content of everybody else. And it's not because they don't necessarily want to. It's just because they're not sure if the types of people that visit their site will really fully appreciate somebody else's style. Because, look, let's think about it. Disbelief is a wide range of ideas and behaviors and opinions, right? And that can range from the group of people that are like, we have to be friendly, and if you say anything mean, you're a big jerk face and I hate you section, which we'll call, let's say, the one on this 10 scale spectrum. And then you have the 10, which is fuck religion, fuck y'all, I fucking hate fucking everything, which would be a 10. I wouldn't put us at 10. I think we've softened. And I don't think I ever said fuck in that close of a range of words. Have I?
Sure. Yeah, probably.
Probably. Maybe in the early days. There you go. But that's the softening, right? I think I've said fuck like 3 times in the podcast so far. So there's been a softening, right? Would you put us at an 8 maybe on the spectrum?
I'd say at this point we're kind of 70.
We're 7? Are you shitting me? I've got down to 7? Man, I've gotten soft.
When's the last time you did a rant?
That is a good question. Well, it depends. I was doing rants in the early days when we moved into this apartment, but that was because I was mostly relying solely on alcohol to do the shows, and alcohol tends to make me very aggressive. Mm. Yeah, so it's hard to say. I think it was about a month ago that I was really ranty and ragey. But as things are starting to improve a little bit, I think I soften. Okay, fine. Can we do 7.5 then on the scale?
Sure, I'll give it that.
All right, so we're 7.5. So here's the problem, right? I figure that if you're coming into the atheism scene, it's hard to tell what spectrum you're going to be on, and you're going to respond really differently depending on how you feel at the time. And there's going to be lots of different strategies. Like, for instance, if I'm just coming out, or if I'm close to being deconverted out of my ludicrous belief, whatever that may be, you know, I'm not going to really respond well if I listen to The Good Atheist. This is not the first show that you should be listening to. This is not a show that you should be introducing to your religious buddies. They're not ready for this shit. You know what I mean? That ain't what we do here, son. But that's because that's part of the spectrum, right? So the early spectrum would probably be like a guy like Guy P. Harrison, who was just the last show that we had, my guest. You probably didn't listen to the interview, Ryan, because you're bad. You're bad.
I listened to the one with the Secular Student Alliance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, okay, we'll see. This will actually lead me to that next point of where I fit into that spectrum. But, yeah, like Guy, he's sort of like he wrote 50 Reasons Why People Believe in a God. And he's really friendly. Like, he comes into this not trying to insult anybody. He's on that spectrum of people who are pretty much on that edge of saying, I don't think any of this makes sense. Am I right? You know, because that, I think that would be on your one here. Person who's just like, I'm starting to doubt this silly
stuff.
There
seems to be some strange holes in this whole Jesus thing.
Yeah, some really strange. I've seen some inconsistencies upon some further research. And I'm feeling very uncomfortable. And plus, there's all these attributes about God that I find morally repugnant, which is causing some problems. So yeah, like, he's on the one scale. And I think that you actually, I think the first thing that most people teetering on that edge need is a motherfucking soft sell, all right? They don't need my show. But, and this is really important, you go through different phases. I mean, at first you'd be like, wow, no, this is BS. And then you kind of like, then you go through a phase maybe where you should come to the Good Atheist podcast. Well, you're like, well, I'm fucking superior jackass. And I want to just make fun of everyone because I think their beliefs are stupid, which I think we fulfill quite nicely. Would you agree?
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, it works. There's a part of that. And like, fuck yeah, you should feel that way. That's an important feeling. You don't have to constantly be on about it. But yeah, it is satisfying to know that you're not consumed in bullshit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. Every time I actually get rid of an idea that was stupid, I feel more clever. I feel like I leveled up, and I like it. So having that emotion is important. So yeah, maybe that's another phase too. And then after a while, you probably soften, like we did. You know, we get old too. Happens with age. You just soften. At some point, we may be like a 3 or 4 man. Can you believe that?
I don't know. I think like I mean. Look at Feringula. He crustied up real hard. I think that's probably the direction it goes. Once you have to start getting up in the middle of the night to pee and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. There's the crusty phase.
Yeah, exactly. You've got all these aches and pains that you can just take out on God.
It's true. I hadn't thought about the fact that my balls will continue to sag and how that might affect my psyche. So, I guess ultimately my answer is I want more involvement from the scene, and I think that the way to do that would be for individuals to have like an environment where they could experiment with the different spectrums. Do you know? Well, I was actually talking about this with a couple other atheist bloggers. Maybe they were thinking, we need an iTunes, but for atheism, where you kind of have different categories, and there's a different pitch all the time. Depending on where a person is, it's sort of like a, hey, are you a religious person who's kind of getting out of a religion? Why don't you start with Letting Go of God, which is a great one-woman show, Julia Sweeney. You should listen to that, and you'll just be like, oh, yeah, I went through the same process. And then why don't you listen to this other person who's got a great sort of follow-up to that, too? And you all of a sudden, you're just like, it's done, right? It's fucking done. And then when you walk in, you're not turned off to it. You don't just think, oh, all atheists are jerks and arrogant. No, I am, though, but that's because I fulfill a niche.
But as far as interviewing goes, I'm sure you'd be open to it if anybody ever came to you.
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, like, I don't even care if you have a show with, like, 10 fucking listeners. I will come on to your show because I remember what that's like. And I'm not gonna tell anybody no if they want to have a thing on a, you know, like a podcast. Because if I'm not hosting, man, that sounds easy to me. I've done not hosting a show. I could not host many shows if I was a co-host. It's fucking sweet.
Okay, Waffle T asks, if one religion were true, which one would you wish it was?
Yeah, that's all right. This will sound weird. Everybody's probably gonna sort of like laugh their ass off at this, but I actually wish that the Raelians were right.
They're that cult in Northern Quebec.
Yeah, Northern Quebec by the race car driver, certain sort of like cult leader who's like the Elohim, which are an alien race that seeded life on Earth. The only reason I wish that one was true is not because I wish there could be an explanation to why we're here, because I think there's a satisfying one. It's just that. The laws of fucking physics. Get over it. But more importantly, it'd be like, oh, there's life on other planets. And they're trying to seed life. That's cool, because I think if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that that's a thing that I want humanity to do if we ever sort of like reach that next stage where you're saying, look, only a small percentage of the universe can have the right conditions for life. You can push things along and kind of make it happen. You know, like with the discovery, we discovered, I think, something like 700 new exoplanets. And there was an article that appeared, I think, in Scientific American or LA or New York Times, not sure which one, that was asking, oh, now that there's all these planets, where's everyone? And the problem that I think there, like, with that is that I don't think, A, that civilizations last very long, or B, that the odds of you being able to reach each other in a time frame that coincides with how long you've been around is unlikely. Like, you're just, there will be very disparate spots where intelligent life that's able to communicate and figure out a couple laws of physics that they can play around with are able to. But otherwise, you're kind of like a ship in the night. You are essentially sailing in the vast ocean of time. And anyone who's ever been in an ocean will tell you that the odds of running into something are pretty fucking rare. And when they happen, you make a movie out of it that makes like $2 billion, like Titanic.
Yeah, I always like that idea of like flinging our seed out into space. It was always one of my favorite concepts and ideas. Like, it doesn't have to be human life. It could just be, you know, it can be kind of like Prometheus, where, and not in like the ship comes and the big buff white guy gets down and like.
Wait, I haven't watched the movie yet. I'm going to do a review like sometime this month as a special thing for bonus members. No, I actually got tickets sent to me. The problem is I've been trying to find a showing that doesn't have 3D in it, because 3D can suck my dick. 3D sucks balls, gives me migraines. It doesn't add anything.
Yeah, I agree. I saw it in 2D, and thank God for that.
But they don't show it in 2D right now in Calgary, so I gotta wait. But I got free tickets from a fan. So
okay,
it's
happening. I'm not ruining anything.
Please
for you.
Don't.
This is like the first 10 seconds. That's stupid. I mean, personally, to me, I'm just like, just shoot a satellite out. It's got some bacteria that'll survive harsh environments, crash it into a planet, and just, you know, leave it for a couple million years and not even worry about it. Just send out a bunch of that. That's good. That's what I'm talking about. Just jacking off into outer space constantly.
Well, you remember how life. You know what? I had an idea, actually. I called it my trillion-year plan now. Because remember how I used to have a 5-billion-year plan that I wanted to write in that book that'll never happen now?
No.
No? Okay, well, basically, originally, the 5-billion-year plan is if you try to write a manual for any living organism on a planet with its demise in mind, what would you advise in 5 billion years time, right? The first piece of advice is you gotta find a new home, because yours is going to be destroyed. It's like inevitable. But that's 5 billion years, right? And that's long, but now I've come up with a new idea. I call the trillion-year plan, because 5 billion years is all good, but I got a new plan that's a trillion years long. I think I mentioned it in one of the shows, and I'll repeat it for you because I think you'll appreciate it. The idea is that you take a star and you manipulate it so that when it goes nova, it becomes a kind of beacon, so that it transmits all the information that's already stored about your civilization. And it could be like an instruction manual for stuff, because you'll have a trillion year radius. You're going to reach a few civilizations if you do that, is my idea. That is, I think at that point, you're 100% likely to communicate with someone else if you find a fucking star that is a beacon. Now, the question of how you do that and how you make sure that other people can see it, that's not my job.
Yeah, how it actually will work, who cares? Don't worry
about
it.
Star Trek magic.
Just explosion big, and then everything works. Don't worry about it.
Don't you fucking worry about it. Some fucking Star Trek-like scientist where, you know, science is on the fringe of magic will make it work, right?
Yeah. Did I sound convinced?
Well, in my defense, every time I've ever watched Star Trek now and gone back and read that, oh, we've isolated antimatter now, and you're like, shit. Didn't I see an episode of Star Trek where they were just talking about that? And then all of a sudden you're realizing, oh, God, are they going to make everything in that show happen? They already made that little data pad happen.
Yeah. Yeah, the flip phones were pretty awesome in their time.
Not just the flip phone. Actually, I could literally build a black, you know, like a device with like a Star Trek pin that could be used via Bluetooth to like talk to people. Like that technology is available. Mm-hmm. You can have that. You can have the little communicators. Name me one technology other than the teleporter and these weird like, you know, buffers for inertia, like that don't exist. Other than those things, a lot of things are possible.
Yeah, it's, science fiction does show us the way often.
So that's why I'm saying, insert trillion year idea. Someone's got a trillion years to figure that out. Well, maybe not that long.
So maybe as far as this answer goes, the one religion that you wish were true, it would be like your religion with the trillion year plan.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if I was like actually like L. Ron Hubbard, I probably would have started my own cult. You know that by now.
Yeah.
And it would have probably involved something like this. And it would have been awesome. Although, you know, it would have probably involved a lot of illicit sex and drugs. Which is why it would have been awesome.
Yeah, well, your Raelian answer kind of infringed on my answer. I would say if there was one, I would want it to be Scientology, because I mean intergalactic wars, nuclear bombed volcanoes, spirit aliens.
Oh, don't forget
in our
the
souls.
Trillion year universe, which means that the universe is way different than what it is.
I dig all that stuff. I think I think it's just as ridiculous as the rest, and they don't seem to have. Well, I can't say they don't have all the same hang-ups as your standard Abrahamic religions. But
and
you know, what am I?
And wouldn't
what
you
am
want?
I gonna...
Wouldn't you want vitamins to cure all diseases? That would be sweet.
It would be sweet.
It's like, oh shit! I got the diabetes. I'm gonna have some vitamin C.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't, you know, what else would I say if it's not going to be one of those wacky ones? Am I supposed to say Islam would be the, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was one true religion and it was actually Islam, and then we'd all convert to Islam and then everything would be peace and love?
Yeah, well, the only reason that any person would want Islam to be true is if you're a misogynistic male, and then you'd like it to be true. So that says something about you.
Plenty of crazy women. Totally wrapped up in Islam, would love it to be true too.
I think that there's plenty of women who are misogynistic themselves, who hate other women. I meet them all the time. They don't like girls. Like there's a, you ever notice, I mean, this is a pretty stereotypical thing, but there's some truth to it. You ever notice that sort of groups of guys will tend to sort of like have more loyalty than groups of girls? There's a little secret out there is that girls don't really, there's a lot of girls that don't really like other girls. They view them as either competition, or if for instance, if a girl's pretty and there's a prettier girl that walks into a room, there can be some problems. Like there's a lot going on. But with guys, I mean, I think primarily I think the same types of jealousies might still be around. I think that there is always that sense of camaraderie that we rely on, where we're just like, we're all bros, right, man? Yeah, bros. Might not always work, and trust me, it doesn't. It's not like it's a glorious club where everything works out good. But I've seen cat fights, and I've seen dudes fights, and the cat fights seemed more vicious, like as if they had more power, they would do more damage. You ever notice?
Well, how about this? Let's move on to the next question. I think we'll leave your observations on females for a more specific show. you can jot them down.
I can jot my controversial notions down.
Yeah.
Yeah. send your complaints at jacobthegoodatheist.net.
You ever notice that women are stupid? Okay, Richard has two questions. Number one, what do you think about Bradley Manning and the whole WikiLeaks thing? Do you think he was right to leak the documents, and do you think he should be freed?
All right, he's that military dude that's... is he in jail or is he going to jail?
No, he hasn't had a trial yet, and they've basically had him locked in solitary confinement for years, slowly driving him insane for a long time.
Oh, I didn't know about the solitary confinement thing.
It's been nuts. He was on like a crazy suicide watch, even though his lawyer was like, this is bullshit. And it basically was driving him crazy because they give him nothing but this crazy coarse sheet, so he's not able to hang himself with it. It's not comfortable enough for him to sleep with. They're constantly waking him up on a regular basis. It's you know, it's pretty close to torture. It's pretty
damn close.
Actually,
no, it is torture. Solitary confinement is classified as torture. And okay, look, here's what I think about it. And I am not surprised. Look, I know that people probably have this image in their minds of what their countries are like. They're probably like, these are places of laws. And these are places where we put the welfare of citizens above blah, blah, blah. And what I will tell you is that not so very long ago, all of this stuff, totally kosher. And then it became a little bit more public, and we all agreed, all of us agreed that that was horrible. But why should they change their MO? Why should any government so paranoid that they would allow the biggest infringements on liberty that I could actually remember, things from the Patriot Act or things that even in Canada where they can listen to your conversations if they think that you are a danger. And then you just realize that your best interest is not at heart, and that the people who try to tell you anything that's true face some very hard times. Like, that's why they're courageous. And that's why we admire them, because we realize that there are consequences to their actions. This young man who leaks some documents and who is essentially condemned to a life of insanity now and essentially just looking for an escape from it through death should tell you something about the quality of his life. And you realize, what was his crime? Well, his crime was the speaking out against Rome. I mean, America. Do you ever get confused, actually? Because I tell you, I went to Washington, and I thought I saw Rome. I thought I saw it. The same civilization obsessed with Greek culture, but not obsessed with philosophy. Very, very anti-intellectualism. That sounds kind of familiar. I got good news, though, folks, is that this is still nothing compared to how it used to be. If that's any creature comfort. Do you think that's a comfort there for people, that it used to be a lot worse?
You'd hope so, but I mean, we talked about this in past shows. Is if you're only reading about the negative stuff, you're just gonna you're gonna slowly slide into wingnut territory because that's all you're seeing. And you know, it is horrible. Everything that's happened to Bradley Manning is wrong. If the same thing happened to the Pentagon Papers guy that happened to Bradley Manning, there were, you know, we would be a very different society now. So. Obviously, you should never lock people up for revealing what the government is doing. There's that funny meme floating around the internet where they talk about, you know, Mr. Facebook selling all of our information to corporations and being the man of the year, and Bradley Manning telling us about the government secrets and being locked up forever. And it's very true. So,
here's the other bit of good news that I have to tell you, is that right now you are living history. Everyone is living history, and that all these things that happen get to be judged by future generations. I think our duty is to make sure that it gets told in the right way, because there's plenty of people that are willing to just continue to propagate a lie. I'll give you a good example, right? In Arizona, the governor, Brewer, there was a recent court ruling that found, I think it was like something like 3 of 4 laws regarding immigration were unconstitutional. And do you know what her reaction was?
What's that?
She went to the press and she's like, this is a great vindication for what we've done. And like when asked, even by reporters, how do you respond to the fact that a majority of the ruling was against you? She's like, this is a vindication. The spirit of what we're trying to do has been upheld. Some people don't have to accept reality, and they don't have to. And there are many people willing to propagate lies.
Yeah, it's funny how 1984 they had that whole department that was designed to basically get rid of all of the past documentation that didn't corroborate with what they were talking about. And the funny thing is, you don't need to do that. You can have all the information out there and free for anybody to look at, and you can still weave your own reality if you want, because people just look for the information that they want to hear.
Well, that is human nature. And you know, this is also the reason, I mean, going back to why I want to write Bible stories, is that most people aren't familiar with the Bible, even when they tell you that you should read it. They don't know what the fuck it says. They just think that if you read it, you'll be like, oh yeah, you believe in God. Why, the guy who tells me to believe in God, he's read the whole thing. And he says it's nothing but awesome. So I'm going to believe him. So why don't you read it and you'll just be like him? Not, of course, realizing that if they fucking read the thing, they'd be like, well, wait a minute, I don't like this. Why should you do that? This is horrible. Yes. Natural reactions to stuff. So you're right. I mean, you can just bury the truth in a mountain of information that you can select. And in a way, that's kind of the danger of the world, where we could create societies or groups that have nothing but the selected information they want to hear. They don't have to face reality, because we treat reality cheaply, where we allow a governor of a state to be able to make such statements and not be like, you're fired. Get the fuck out of here, you delusional bitch. You're out of your mind. We don't do that. We're just like, oh no, well, this could be interpreted in many ways. No, it can't. You are crazy and you're trying to put through an untruth. And then maybe all of us should have a bit more of a, you know, like something invested in it. But this is why I think we should be an 8 out of 10 rather than 7.5 out of 10, yeah. You agree?
Yeah. As far as Manning being right to leak the documents and should he be free, I mean, as far as being right about leaking the documents, he released, I think it was considered the largest, leak of documents in the history of the United States. And of course, a lot of people were upset because, oh, there might be like operatives in different countries that are going to be hurt, or it hurts our standings. I mean, to me, it's information wants to be free. And we're moving towards a system where information is just becoming free. It's harder and harder to keep secrets. And anybody that's fighting that trend, they're fighting a losing battle. And to me, the more information that's out there, the more opinions can be made, the more ideas can be shared, the more solutions can be found. And it's ridiculous that that we're going against that. Anybody that's taken a look into all of the information, I mean, even now, because what you have is you have a bunch of information in there. There was so much that it was really crowdsourced. And up to this date, even just last week, there is information that came out new news that came up that you could infer new. You could figure out the inference from the WikiLeaks releases and understand that news in a completely different light. So this news is still helping people understand what's actually going on in the world around them. And how can you say that's a bad thing as a citizen of the world?
Well, here's the other thing, too, is that, you know, I feel like I was, you know that whole trope saying, like, well, the media never gets it right. The media never does this and blah, blah. There's an irony in that statement, because a person will say that and still rely on some form of media for their information. What they're trying to do is undermine media that they don't want to follow. And we kind of have to realize that, yeah, opinions are going to be biased. Do you remember the way that people used to have information in the past? This was a disastrous situation. And while some people may lament the fact that, okay, maybe there was a period where someone thought that there was more integrity in news, and I would tell you that I don't think so. I think the integrity now is greater. It's just that your ability to find that can be taxed, because it can be difficult to find information about stuff you're not looking for, not aware of. That's the problem now. The information is available out there, but how do you discern it from sheer lies, and how do you find it? And then you realize that those two questions actually tell you a lot more about what you should be doing in general rather than where you should go. If those are your questions, then that's fine. You should always be asking yourself that question. You know, I avoid MSNBC because I can't stand their counter-reaction to a Fox, their inherent bias and even what they say. I'm like, I don't like the way you present it. I think it's balls. Maybe some people need it. That's fine. it's not a spectrum that I respond to. So I need to find the right spectrum for me. And I'm like, as much as I'm an 8 out of 10, I take the same approach to my news. I'm like, I want fiery people that are not afraid to tell it like it is and whose interests are clear. These types of people I tend to trust a little bit more. I won't deny that.
Yeah, this view from nowhere crap isn't helping anybody.
No, it's a false view because you might, I mean, even the times where you're saying, like, I'm playing devil's advocate, you're not. You can't. You just can't. But here's what I would say. Identify where you are on the spectrum of opinions. Because even in news people, I would say that there are some news individuals that manage to do a better job than others. And it would be fine if we could all properly identify all of their spectrums. So we know that if a journalist, like let's say Michael Moore is talking about gun control, and you know where he lies in that spectrum. And then if a guy like John Stossel talks about it, you know where he lies too. And as long as you knew those things, I feel like you could actually make a better and more informed opinion about where you should stand. Because you're just like, hey, wait a minute. This does represent an extreme. Is he really after all those truths? No, he's trying to put a point through. It's your fucking job to be educated, jerk. It is your job, by the way. Not mine, not Ryan's. Your job.
Okay, Richard, second question. Are you a fan of manned space exploration? Do you think it's a waste of money, or do you think it's worth it?
I am not a fan of manned space exploration. I think that it demonstrates a archaic view of how space exploration will be in the future. I mean, I was reading an article about how China wants to go to the moon and wants to go to Mars, and I'm like, let them. It's a fucking waste of money. Because the trip to Mars and the trip back, I gotta tell you, is not gonna be a happy camper story. There are the challenges leading up to a successful return are still insurmountable, even with our current like technology, for lots of reasons. I won't go into all of them, but I can tell you that if you're going to explore space, you don't send a baby that's been grown in a specific oxygen-rich environment with a specific gravity out into the wilds of space. You don't do that because that's not how you get the best science. Do you think we got the best information on the moon from the moon landings? No.
Okay. I thought I was wondering for a second there if you were actually asking me if it was just rhetorical.
No, it's rhetorical. No, they didn't. I mean, they brought back some rocks. They were able to do some tests on gravity and shit like that. But really, the best information is still coming from probes that are designed to look for specific things. Probes looking for water, landers that can go on and be there for years and cover more land and have stuff built into them that allows them to, you know, run experiments and shit like that. I mean, I mentioned this book on many podcasts. Read Packing for Mars and know the constant struggles you have just sending people in an unstable orbit. I mean, you guys know that the space station is in an unstable orbit, right? It will decay over time. It will crash. This is not something that's going to last forever because the actual cost of sending something into a stable orbit is gigantic. You don't want to fucking do it. So everything we put into space has a time limit on it. That's how tough it is to be out in space. The shit just wants to crash and burn constantly.
I always just kind of wish that we were a little bit more flippant, a little bit more Russian in our approach. Like, I was watching a whole bunch of NASA documentaries, and they talked about whenever something would blow up and they'd lose a couple people, and I'm actually surprised that more people haven't died, that as few people have died as possible, and it's pretty impressive how they've gone over everything and just turned everything upside down every time an incident happens, when to me it seems perfectly like if you're going to go into space, you better be prepared for people to die. Do you think people sailed across the ocean going, they're going to be safe, nothing's going to happen to them? That's just not the way that it's going to work.
I feel like the manned space exploration is like the 18th century version of sea exploration. Like, let's send someone in a big metal ball, and they should be fine, right? Oh, no, they're not. And I think the reason why there weren't that many people killed is because at least now our level of sophistication has increased. Like, think about when you send something into space, how many parts have to work perfectly?
All of them.
All
the parts.
All the fucking parts. And they could be tens of thousands of parts. And that always increases the chances of anything going wrong. So, I don't want people to get me wrong. It's like saying, like, should we not go out in space? That's not what I said. I said that the future of manned space exploration is robotics. This is the immediate future. Now, in the long term, could we have the capabilities of creating artificial environments and then traveling with those artificial environments? Like, well, if we're harnessing fucking powers of stars, like my whole trillion fucking year plan, hails fucking yeah, you could do that. You could be just, you can harness, once you harness fucking energy, you can do whatever the fuck you want. We're not there yet. And in the meantime, I say, why don't you stop wasting money sending human beings in diapers to do mundane tasks and send super advanced fucking avatar versions of ourselves that explore other planets. There you go. And you would avoid a few things. Like, let me give you a good example, right? Let's say that you could send people over to Europa, which I think is actually the most likely candidate to find life on another planet. Maybe not super advanced life, but like bacteria and shit, which is what I think the red veiny shit on Europa might be. All right. I think it might be residue or shit from life. Waste product from life that lives in the sort of like oshy briny environment. Now, if you were to introduce human beings into that fucking environment, do you know what you bring with you? Contaminants. You bring in a whole new environment, and what, who knows what kind of effect that'll have? It's like going to Australia times a billion. So no, I don't think we should be interacting with environments that might in fact have their own ecosystems. Maybe even ecosystems that we don't understand or have developed yet. So I'm like, why don't you send something lifeless like Data from Star Trek onto other planets? Less room for infection, in my opinion.
Okay, Raiden asks, hey, Jacob, I wanted you to illuminate me on why abortion is okay. I mean, call me ignorant, but essentially I feel icky for some reason when I say I do support abortion, and I feel that I have an obligation as an atheist gay liberal to support it, and deep down I do, but there's like a big hole. It feels empty or wrong to do so. I'm pretty sure that's not because of any religious influence. I hope you understand what I'm talking about, and do you think I'm being irrational here?
You know, it's funny because every once in a while, I think I get a few emails from people because, you know, you and I, we joke a lot.
We are abortion cheerleaders. Rah, totally. Rah, abortion.
I mean, my equivalent of the Scooby-Doo van is the abortion van. And the reason why we do that is because we kind of, like, at least this is the way I feel, is that I want to take the sting out of it a little bit. And I'll explain to you why and why that's not irrational. And the reason it's not irrational is because for some people it is a really big fucking deal. And while we do joke about it, I won't deny, like, there are just some times where this is the hardest shit in the world, where you have a person that has to have like an abortion because their baby has a condition where they haven't grown a brain. That sucks.
Or it's the closest thing to murder that most women will come to performing.
I suppose so. I mean, like, here's what I think is the problem we have essentially with it, is that there is a part of us that wants to believe that we are sanctimonious in our opinions of life, that life is precious, that life should go on and things like that. But this opinion only stems from a culture that has shielded you from the realities of life. I mean, you and I, Ryan, are shielded from the realities of nature, aren't we? Think about, just generally speaking, your day today. Does it resemble the day-to-day of any other creature in nature, sir?
If they do, they're lucky because Pop-Tarts is delicious.
Right. I mean, for the most part, it's living in the world is avoiding constant predation, natural disasters that wipe you out, just all the kinds of things that actually our ancestors were facing. And then they invented some pretty cool things, one of them being the culture you live in, that shielded you from all of those things. And one of the things that it shielded you from was the realities of abortion as just a thing. Like, let me give you an example. What is the percentage of pregnancies that end in spontaneous abortions? You know, if I told you that it's close to half, would that surprise you? I mean, it's why we always joke, God is the greatest abortionist of all time, if he exists. I mean, creatures like ourselves, very delicate creatures like ourselves, they kind of need things to work out really, really well in order for them to go good. And a lot of times that doesn't happen for whatever reasons. It's just, you know what, nature gets a lot of things wrong. Maybe the sperm that impregnated someone, not the best. Maybe the egg, a little bit damaged. There's tons of fucking reasons. Everything can go wrong. I mean, the very fact that you are procreating and creating other human beings, like, yeah, try to do that. Try to mimic that ability in a lab. Good luck. You can't even make meat that doesn't look like slime. Okay? It's not looking too good. And we're pretty fucking cool. We can go to the moon. We can't do that yet. So you realize there's some complexity to the thing, so there's going to be some problems and some errors, and that is the reality of life. And the reason why we have to kind of put aside some of those feelings and saying, like, I feel like there's a better way, is that you just don't see the other side of it. The side where if this didn't happen, life would be worse. That there are places where women are trying to give themselves abortions as we speak any way possible for reasons like maybe their parents will kill them for being pregnant. Or maybe now that they're not a virgin, something similarly horrible will happen. They'll bring dishonor or whatever. Tons of fucking reasons. Life just happens and you have to kind of open your eyes up to it. And just realize that your sensibilities, as sweet as they are now misplaced in the realities and cruelty of nature.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to what's the alternative here. It's like we all agree that abortions are icky and bad and not good. But we also know statistically that if you ban abortions, then...
More deaths.
Yeah, pretty much. So, and this is proven. This is just statistically a fact. You give people access to abortion services, you give them access to better sexual education, and the number of abortions go down. It's like win-win. I think, you know, it's a lot of public relations, a lot of marketing. There's a reason that they're called pro-life, and we didn't go pro-abortion. We went pro-choice, which is you know, a pretty good answer, but it still comes down to the whole thing that we have to – we're in the weird position of having to really rally around the concept of getting abortions.
Yeah.
And it's a weird team to cheer for.
It's the unpopular fucking side. But you know what? With a lot of life, the one thing you have to realize is your intuitive understanding of things is usually wrong. That's why if you intuitively think, well, it's better to be pro-life because life is good, that intuition is wrong. Because you don't know the realities of life intuitively. You just have your little life that you've been living, sheltered, however that might be, but still fucking sheltered. So your opinion is invalid, as hard as that is to fucking swallow. The one thing that we should be listening to is, well, science on the matter. Hate to fucking say it. Maybe this is one thing where we find it difficult to conform because so much of our scientific understanding of the world is counterintuitive. And we don't like it. We're like, well, surely I have to be right. Surely none of this could have happened by itself. It had to have a creator. Intuition wrong. Fail. It's like you just can't perceive time in billions of years and how much shit can happen in almost four billion years. Yeah. It's a long time, man.
Okay, Brian asks, do you believe that it is possible for an openly atheist individual to successfully run for an elected office? If not, do you see it becoming possible in the future?
Well, I don't know if you saw this. I linked to it on the fan page. There was a recent poll that said that now the majority of Americans in 2012 say that they would vote for an atheist president. I think it was something like 54% would. With that said, I think one of the important things to remember is in Wisconsin, before they had that whole recall election for Scott Walker, the poll showed that he would be recalled. But when it came, the crunch, when it was fucking crunch time, people voted differently. So what that tells you is actually when a person is being surveyed, one of the most important things is, are they with someone else that they're trying to impress? So what that means is that no one's really telling you the truth. You're surveying them. They're just telling you what you they think you want to hear. So with that, even though the survey says that as of right now, technically, depending on how the survey questions were asked, you could maybe have an atheist president.
Yeah, that's kind of like a virgin mind that's being asked that question. If you get it into an actual crunch time situation where you've got, you know, millions of dollars of outside interest money pouring in with attack ads against this godless person, who knows how that would swing. But, I mean, on the good side, Australia has already had a atheist prime minister, and I'm sure if you look in the UK and across Europe, you've got tons of them. So, okay, Scott Jensen asks, who are some of the people slash feeds slash blogs that you read daily?
I actually have a post that I'll be linking in the notes where I give out the RSS reader that I have, which is pretty much a combination of my RSS and Ryan's RSS. And this is a pretty comprehensive list, but with that said, I mean, I'm sure that there's tons of upcomers that I haven't even mentioned yet that will just sort of pop up. And, you know, a good example is this blog called leavingfundamentalism.wordpress.com. There's a musician called Johnny Scaramanga. What a great name, eh? Scaramanga. Anyways, he's in the UK, and he wrote a blog post about accelerated Christian education, which is like this bullshit fucking faith school stuff that's happening in the UK. And then guess who picked it up? IO9 and then fucking Salon. Like, that's a fucking big deal, right? And he's just been writing for a few months and already he's breaking some fucking stories. So truth be told, I don't even know who might be sort of like totally on fire right now. I mean, I try to have my finger on the motherfucking pulse, but you know, it might just be as an unknown little treasure that people have, kind of like the good atheist, you know, where you're just like, I found you accidentally and I love you. That's probably how it is with a lot of shit.
Yeah. But, you know, as far as my reader goes, if you're looking for just a nice, like a good overall picture of the big news that's going down, richarddawkins.net. Always covers the big stories. Like, you don't have to worry about missing any of those Catholic sex scandals or anything going on with the Vatican. They usually get those pretty good. Anytime there's, you know, students fighting school boards over some extremely horrible atheist oppression, they're good with that. I used to read a lot of Reddit atheism, but then it turned all into Rage Comics and
Rage Comics and Images. But here's the truth. I still go on because if you dig deep enough, you'll find the occasional, you know, gem, which is why that's actually where all the good stuff from my fan page probably goes to. It's like, yeah, I mine the crap now because Reddit's turned into a place for teenage boys to put Rage Comics. But that's fine. I told you that's a phase. Okay. It just, everything happens in phases. Ladies, your boobs will come out eventually. The young ladies that listen to the show. Yeah. That just happens. Phases. Just make sure that if you're going through phases, don't ask a religious person about it, because then they'll tell you that you're sinning or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, Scott Jensen also wants to know, since it looks like Romney is going to be the front runner for president of the USA, is he the front runner now? Could you please expose all the douchebaggery of the LDS church history? For example, Joseph Smith being a big scammer, marrying 13-year-olds, and none of the original witnesses of the gold plate staying as members of the church and all that. Basically, he wants your thoughts on, the Mormons and their sketchy history.
Okay, well, you know how we were joking about the whole I could start a cult thing, and then it would be awesome because it would be just sort of like drug-fueled and what have not. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the truth is that people kind of want to build cults. They want it. I mean, cults are around because that's people like it. And if you wonder what that's like, or if there's something that you're doing that's cultish, let me give you a good example. If you've ever played an MMO, you have a good idea of what a cult is like. If you've played it, you know, for a long time and almost fucking ruined your life and didn't do anything else, here's what it was. It was a fantasy environment where you got to interact with other human beings that believed and engaged in the same fantasy that you did. Does that not sound kind of appealing even to someone who embraces reason?
Yeah, it doesn't sound too shabby.
Doesn't sound too shabby. I mean, and think about this, not to throw you some sort of like future panic, but in a world in which you can create virtual environments, how would those things not feel true? Like, think about a world where sort of the virtual reality is totally like the same as nowadays. Would you not, say, as a Christian, invent a virtual reality world that was really more Christian-like? That would, whatever fucking vision you had in reality, you're just like, I'm going to build it and come over to my reality, and that's where we're going to hang out. Because ultimately speaking, are human beings invested in reality as it is now, or are they more interested in a virtual kind if given the opportunity?
I think there was a book that was just released called, I think, Reality is Flawed, that talks actually about that and all of the ways that game worlds, like when you take the amount of time that we spend in virtual worlds, and this isn't even including just, you know, your run-of-the-mill sitting in front of the computer reading articles on the internet. That's not as virtual as they're talking about. They're, you know, engaging, having characters in three-dimensional spaces, shooting people and, you know, mass-affecting them and, I don't know, forging shit in the...
Whatever the young people do...
In the EverQuests.
Nice.
I just locked in my age right there.
You did.
So one funny thing about the Mormons, there's this thing going on. Vice TV is going to be releasing a video soon.
Oh, I love Vice TV, by the way. God, I love them. You know what? They were in that in a documentary called Page One, Behind the Scenes in the New York Times. There's a guy in that documentary that totally schools them. We're saying like, oh, you know, like, you know, oh, plenty of underground journalists who think, or underground people who think they're playing at journalism, try to put that together. And I'm like, you know what, New York Times, Vice is kicking your ass, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's true journalism than what they're up to right now. They
no shit.
They've gotten stuck in some weird fucking system where they just have a format that they apply to everything, regardless of if it does anything proper for the story or not.
Well, Vice is just brave, man.
Yeah, they got balls.
Brave shit. They got balls, man. They got balls. Like, I would say, like, again, you know what Vice represents for me? It's a spectrum, right? Their journalism is more acty journalism. They have an agenda. But it doesn't mean that agenda's wrong. You know what I mean? It just means that perhaps you, in educating yourself, should actually try to do the best to find out what the complete opposite view of everything is. And if that part sounds kind of like you're not buying it, then at least you tried.
They went down to Mexico, check out some of these Mormon camps. Actually, the camps that it makes you think that they're down there in tents and stuff. But they have these giant compounds that are just Mormon exclusive. And these are actually the places that Mitt Romney's dad came from. He ran for the president of the United States too, and then they realized he was born in Mexico. So
he was born in Kenya. I mean, Mexico.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, eh? But there's all sorts of the insane history down there. I think you read something about Under the Banner of Heaven, which talks about the which Mormon,
the Fundamentalists.
Yeah, but where were they?
Oh my God, where is it? I want to say Colorado. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, well, these ones down in Mexico, they're just as colorful and crazy. They all. Roamer, like the compounds have trucks with semi-automatic weapons hooked into the trailer bed for someone to like stand on, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, and fire, because the Mormon groups are in like basically this big war with the Mexican cartels.
Really?
That's yeah. There's up. There's all sorts of crazy stuff going on down there. And, of course, it's all still polygamous because that's the whole reason they're down there.
Well, you ever notice, though, because here's the thing. I think religion represents a sort of archaic human need that was present. And I'll give you a good example. Warren Jeffs, who's actually in the book Under the Banner of Heaven, was recently arrested, and he's facing trial, and he's in jail. So what he did was he let out an edict for all his followers, and he said no one should have sex except for 15 people that I've chosen. Now, let me ask you this question, and you actually probably know the answer to this. In guerrilla culture, who gets to decide who's having sex?
The alpha gorilla.
The alpha gorilla, right. Is anything like what Warren Jeffs is doing feel oddly familiar in like that that whole I'm a big giant gorilla and you all do what I say and I control the harem kind of way?
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, just a little bit. And you know what? We kind of look like gorillas, don't we?
Speak for yourself.
What? No, I'm speaking for you too. You got a bit of a gorilla look. Yeah, to you? Maybe a little bit with those big, thick arms? At least I look more like a lizard. Still, you, sir, look like the gorilla. Although, I don't know, maybe you've actually... Have you lost some weight, or have you thinned out? What's going on?
Yeah, it's still pretty gorilla-ish, I'll admit.
But you've been more active, right? That's the whole thing? About you being out of while you're all active now?
Well, more is a relative term, and it's not difficult for me to be more active than I was in Montreal. But, I'll say yes, I have been more active.
Well, that's... I don't even know what that means. By the way, how are you settling into your new place?
Oh, it's quite nice. It's pretty awesome.
How does it feel like to be in a new environment? Because you and I are actually kind of like doing the whole thing where we're in new city. Well, I mean, you've lived there before, but it's still kind of like a new environment for you.
You know, I don't know. It hasn't really sunk in yet, so I couldn't really tell you at the moment. But
all right, when it sinks in, we'll have a show where we'll talk about it. Because I have a whole bunch of interesting observations that I think that by the time you're ready to have it, like the conversation could be interesting. Because we're also in very different environments. Like I'm getting used to a new city, like all together. It's very strange.
Sure. Yeah, we can have that discussion on another time.
All right, let's keep moving it. What else we got? Because I don't want to focus too much on the Mormon thing, because, you know, like, to be fair to, I think it's Scott who asked that question, that's a huge, that's a show. Now, if people want a whole show about all the stuff that the Mormon church does, including their whole real estate business and that kind of stuff, I'll gladly do a show about that.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a good time for it somewhere between now and November.
Yes, though I think probably right around election time is probably when I'll do a Mormon show for some weird reason.
Okay, Real Men Pray asks, do you feel that the celebration of religiously based holidays like Christmas, Easter, etc., even when observed with the most secular of intentions, ultimately reinforces and helps strengthen religion? If yes, is the solution to create bizarro holidays like agnostic Christmas and heathen tag that essentially have the same elements as their religious counterparts, but that marginalize atheists because they are obviously an attempt to get the cool stuff out of a holiday? So basically he's saying, what's the deal with
the holidays? What should we do about the holidays? Well, let me tell you actually one thing about holidays. If you think that religions control holidays, then you should read a history book. It's the other way around. Look, the holidays that you have, do you think that celebrating Christmas around December 25th is a new thing?
Huh? Or that it has anything to do about the actual date of Jesus Christ?
It has nothing to fucking do with it. It has everything to do with one very important fact. One, the Earth has a 23-degree tilt to it. That's the first and most important thing you need to remember about all your holidays. Which means that, you know, any other planet where life develops, depending on their tilt, they'll probably have different holidays too. Yeah. But our 23 point whatever, I think it's 0.5, I'm not quite sure, degree angle makes it so that we have seasons. This is a really important thing because holidays are linked with seasons. And I'll give you a good example. Halloween. Well, that's around the fall, right? And it comes from All Hallows' Eve, which is a much older belief that around that time, the link between the living and the dead tended to wane. And lo and behold, this was just around the time that leaves are falling from trees and things are fucking dying. Do you get my drift here?
Mm-hmm.
So even, and look at December 25th. Why do we celebrate it with just lights and stuff like that? Why do we do that? Well, when you're in the Northern Hemisphere, which most people are in the world, or in the Northern Hemisphere, right around that time is when days start getting longer if you're sort of like higher up north, depending on where you are. Because if you're near the equator, longer days for you is like a what? Our days are all the same. Well, not up north. Up north, it gets all crazy-like, and it's a different world. And in that world, we have seasons, and we have days that are prematurely cut short, and then some days which are much longer. And those times, holidays tend to spring up. So the most brilliant thing that you can do as a religion when you walk in is like, how do I take these religions and insert myself right in there? How can I just sort of shove myself and say, this is about me now. I'm all about the December 25th, the winter solstice. That's me you're celebrating. Not days getting longer and the long haul of having to deal with shorter days and therefore more cold is not a reality anymore. Why would we want to celebrate the day where we have more energy? I actually think it should just sort of be boiled down to that, yeah. You can tell a lot about a holiday by how much the sun is generating energy. Which is why, by the way, sort of spring break, lots of titties. That's fertility right there. That's what that is.
Personally, for me, I'm perfectly happy to take any religious holiday so long as it gives me the day off.
I like that. Well, you should also realize that holidays have a tendency to become more secularized over time. I mean, let me ask you a question. Are more people looking forward to Santa or Jesus come Christmas?
That's a loaded question. There is a war on Christmas, don't you know?
Yeah, there's a war on Christmas because it's Christian people having to wage war on the much more popular secular Christmas.
Because it's so much more awesome.
It's so much more awesome. It's like, hey, in this Christmas, you don't have to go to boring church to celebrate a dead guy's birth.
And if you do, it's all like the choir and the music and shit like that. It's much more social and fun.
Well, you know what? Here's the truth. Maybe in the old days, I mean, you got to remember that the church used to put on the show that you would go to in town. Remember the days before television, like the majority of mankind's history? Yeah, those days where you just sort of like, I got nothing to do except for kill fleas that are infesting my body. Hey, what can we do? Well, it turns out that the church that's pretty much responsible for a lot of the really important things, like timekeeping and all this other kind of stuff. They put on a show every once in a while that's better than picking fleas off you. So why don't we go to that? But you see, nowadays in the kind of modern world where you're like, well, I could go and listen to some boring-ass sermon about how I'm pretty much a piece of shit, honestly. But some guy who had a really bad weekend loves me. And this means that I should devote one day a week to him. This is up against an ever-growing amount of entertainment that you have at your disposal instantly. So it's a tough sell. Tough sell.
Okay, Isaac Swords wants to know, have you ever considered a polyamorous relationship?
That's a weird question. You know, when somebody asks me that question, I feel like they're like, and hey, P.S., do you want to fuck me? Like,
I don't know if Isaac Swords wants to fuck you.
Well, no, it's just that I'm not saying that that person is asking me, but I mean, like, if you start a conversation with that, you're probably trying to do something sketchy. Okay, well, you know, I do have an opinion about polyamorous relationships, but what about you, Ryan? Do you have an opinion about it?
I wouldn't do it. It's one woman is trouble enough.
Send your letters to RyanHerkus@gmail.com.
I'm just like, I don't even like maybe if the culture was set up to allow it and it was totally normal and you wouldn't have, like, you know, wives that hated each other's guts and all the problems that would go with a polyamorous relationship, then, you know, I could roll that way, I'm sure. But look, that's not the way that culture is set up. It's not the way that women in society are willing to go. I haven't seen that Mormon show about the guy with the multiple lives, but if it's dramatic enough to keep people tuning in, then it's too dramatic for me.
No, it's true. You know, like, here's, and the truth is that I have a very egalitarian view of relationships. I'm like, of course I feel a bit of that alpha maleness where I'm like, I want it all, but the truth of the matter is that I don't want anyone that I'm in a relationship with being with anyone else. And I would never feel comfortable with only having it my way. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I just couldn't do that because I'm like, no, I'm a hypocrite piece of shit. And I really don't want to do that. It's just that, yeah, I have a portion of me that's like, hey, I'm a male. I want to fuck a lot of things that move. And, you know, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not willing to fucking sacrifice a relationship with, you know, like, an awesome woman just for, you know, what can only be a very brief tryst. Not interested. It's a lot of complication in life. I'm not ready to have a mustache and fancy lotions. I'm not an orgy guy.
I mean, even Bin Laden had trouble with it. Apparently there was a lot of suspicion that he had a couple of wives and he had a new wife, and the one before that was all bitter and shit. And when he got betrayed, a lot of people at first were like, she must have done it.
Yeah, so. Well, it's not uncommon that there's always going to be a favorite. Probably not a good thing. So
yeah, actually, even with Muhammad, yeah, multiple wives, bad scene.
Aisha,
bad,
I think,
scene.
Yeah, the 9-year-old he banged.
Yeah.
Nice job. What a fucking role model.
He is a role model. Isn't that great?
It to billions of people. It's great. This is why I'm glad that I'm just living history. All I gotta do is drop my fucking mind load, and then I'll probably be gone, and hopefully so will that jackass idea. So Muhammad will be just like Zoroaster. Just a filthy piece of shit who started a cult.
Okay, Chocobar asks, you talked about wanting to keep this site advertisement free, but with all your talk of being poor, have you considered allowing it? A lot of atheist blogs actually have religious ads on their pages, free thought blogs being the big one. So in a sense, religions would actually be supporting your website.
Why is it that people who have never done anything on the internet think that they have a financial solution to your problem?
Well, you know, if it seems like low-hanging fruit, it's just they don't understand that advertising on the internet is pathetic.
It's so fucking pathetic. I mean, who's going to really advertise on the site? Seriously. And B, I mean, the site doesn't get enough advertising for that to even be interesting. I don't want to hurt anyone's eyeballs for the equivalent of a Happy Meal.
Let me get a little bit more technical, because we went through this, and I think it's kind of an interesting perspective. I'm sure there are listeners out there who've thought of starting their own site, and they think, hey, well, then, you know, I can run Google Ads, or I can do this and that, and here's how it'll go. The way that it works is that websites, for the most part, don't run their own ads. You have, you know, some guys who will say, you know, if you want to advertise down the side, give us $50 and we'll throw something up. And that's like a maintainable way to maybe get a couple of ads if you're a decent-sized website. But for the most part, you have to join a network. And that's basically what Google Ads is. Google Ads takes your website, contextualizes the text on it, and serves ads based on that. Google doesn't pay basically anything. And what we've found is that if your site is popular enough that people are actually clicking on the links to help you out, then as soon as you hit that, what is it, $100 is when Google will pay you out, is something like that, which will still take you months. As soon as you get close to that, 99% of the time before they send out a check, Google will take a look into how your clicks were gained and decide, you know what, we see that one person clicked this link five times, therefore click fraud, and you not only get nothing, but you will also get banned from Google advertising services completely, which is a big pain in the ass.
With no explanation and no ability to actually contest the fact that you didn't get paid.
That happened to you. That happened to me. That happened to several of my friends.
And that was for like $100.
Yeah, so that happens quite regularly. So that just gives you a view of how Google works. It's almost a scam. Almost. Now, there are other networks out there, but you need to make a certain amount of hits. I think it was something along the lines of 100,000 page views a month to be considered for most of the smaller ones. And another problem is you're going to be grouped into categories for your website. So if you know if you're a comedy website, you're in this group. Or if you're and it all is based on different. You know, if you're watching television and there are ratings, it doesn't matter if there's like a million Gomers, like 70-plus-year-olds watching it. They don't buy anything. Advertisers want 19 to 42. And while you would think that atheism, that's where we're all at, for some reason, the atheism category on a lot of these advertising networks assumes that everybody checking out atheism websites are old people. So you get grouped into this really terrible category where you're getting shitty ads for a low click-through and a low per-view cost. And if you're lucky enough to have enough page views, which I was on my site, but Jake still I don't think gets on his, even if you are lucky enough, it'll be amazing if you're going to clear more than $200 a month.
Yeah, it's really the thing that people have to understand about the way that everything is designed is just that, I mean, something as simple as swearing will cut you off to like 75% of advertising monies.
Yeah, literally. I stopped swearing on. I recently stopped swearing on my site, and Avenue revenue went up 3 times.
That's just how it is.
So
yep. It would be like, okay, well, number one, I have to censor myself. So, however, like, there might be some people who are like, good, no more swear words, and I tell you, suck my dick. I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm not going to change a fundamental aspect of what I am for a few hundred dollars. Like, it's so not worth it. And I feel like what would happen is that so much of what's genuine about the show would just disappear. And I really wouldn't be passionate about doing it anymore. I mean, like, I can't sell The Good Atheist because that's who I am. No one will buy this. So I either make something of it or I don't. And if I'm going to make something of it, it's going to be my way. That's why I did the Kickstarter thing. I mean, like, even if a publisher came to me and said, we want to give you some money, I'd say no. I mean, I think Ryan, you will admit that's always been my position.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I don't care if they showed up with 30 grand. I would tell them to fuck off. And it's only because I don't think that what I've done is worth that little. And I don't think that it's worth me losing control of it. I mean, there's a fan and a fellow blogger, I'm not going to name him, who wrote a book. And I asked him, I'm like, he's a fellow podcaster, and he's got a good following. And I'm like, well, why haven't you done an audio version? He's like, well, I sold the rights to my book, and the publisher hasn't expressed any interest in doing that. And I'm like, you have a podcast. People would love to hear that. Why aren't you doing it? And it's because it's not his anymore. That's fucked up. And I don't want that. I don't think it's worth it, because The Good Atheist, as much as I try to sort of like go around and be like, this is a money-making operation, because I guess I have that aspect myself, this is still activism. And I don't want anyone to own what I think is a message that needs to fucking be out there. Like, I don't want anybody controlling that content at all. Like, if I fail at what I do, if the Good Atheist campaign, the book doesn't fucking take off, a lot of the shit's still gonna be free, because the word has to get out. I just want to do it full time. I just want to do it for a living. I think it's possible. I guess we'll see.
And this leads into our last question. Patty wants to know, if she paid, could she come in and sit in on a recording of The Good Atheist?
Truth be told, Like, all right, if the book really does super well, and it, I mean, it could. I'm not giving it a big, like, chance because, I mean, like, I've seen projects do amazingly well. I think that if you guys put all of, like, your weight behind it and support it, even minimally, we can make it. And it's going to fucking work. And the good atheist will be saved, and it's just going to be fucking a bright future ahead. But if it does really well, like, if you let your friends know, if you fucking contribute a bit more and everybody else does, I get to have a lot of other options. And one of them that I want to do is a show. Like a live show. I mean, how long have I been talking about this, Ryan?
A while. A couple of years.
Yeah, a couple of years. I mean, like, I have hesitated doing a show on YouTube for a while because I really don't like guys just talking in front of a camera in their living room. I'm like, this has no longevity. I don't want to watch some fucking egotistical yappity yap yap fest. I want something that looks at least like there's some love to it. And I just want to be in a place where that's not impossible, where I can record a show and say to like 100 people, hey, I'm recording a show. Come on down to the studio and we'll do a live version. I'm not talking a weekly thing because that's not realistic. But every once in a while, I want to do a live show because get this, guys. I mean, with all the shows that we've produced, we're almost at 1 million downloads. 1 million downloads. If you've laughed on average once or twice from a show, which I'm sure that you can fucking claim, that's millions of laughs that I've never been able to hear, ever. And that's kind of sad. And I want to hear you guys' reaction to it. I think it would be awesome, amazing. Like, some people tell me, like, oh, I was laughing my ass off and people were looking at me when that happened. I don't know what that's like. I have no idea what that's like. And I wish that I could. And you know what? Here's the truth. This book project is the beginning of this happening. And I think that Ryan will testify saying, like, I've had my eye off a lot of balls for a long time because I'm Mr. Idea. But the Bible Stories is an entirely fan-driven project. This is what people asked for. And this is what I'm giving you. And I'm like, I'm removing myself from the equation. And I'm like, I'm going to give you guys what you want because I think that if I do, then you guys are going to give me what I want, which is even more content, which is even more awesome stuff, which is like a fucking web show, which is like a graphic novel I want to write eventually, a video game that I want to really make. Like, this could actually be doable. There's an engine that would allow me to make an adventure game in the style of Scooby-Doo featuring all of us doing voiceover. Does that not sound exciting to people?
Scooby-Doo's going to sue you.
No, they can suck my balls. I got parody.
Man, everybody's going to suck your balls. That's what this show is all about, sucking this and sucking that.
Okay, well, if they do, because they have to go to this, they have to go to the Kickstarter thing, and they have to sort of suck my balls and buy a copy of the book in some form or another. So that is a bit of ball sucking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this is it, guys. I mean, everybody who's asking me, like, what's the deal with the Save Good Atheist campaign? It's summarized in a book that I'm working on that you guys are going to love. So that's kind of how it's all planned. And your support on this one thing is, that's what I need you guys to do. Like, that's the one thing like that I've been talking about and building up with, you know, like the Atheist Appreciation Month was a build up to that. Like a shitload of free podcasts that I've been giving out is all about that. 'Cause this is happening. And I want everyone to be excited about it because I'm pretty sure it's going to work. Like, I'm like 90% sure. It would take everyone being like, no, or maybe, you know, the derivatives market collapsing for that to happen.
Always a possibility.
Yeah, it could go any day, those derivatives market, couldn't they? Like, the fucking future market is, oh, my God.
You just can't think about that.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to. And every time I'm watching a show or listening to a thing where a person kind of makes reference to it, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have a panic attack. The derivatives market will be fine. Purchase the book. The future is bright. Right, Ryan?
Exactly.
Exactly. And with that, That is the mailbag episode. So thanks everybody for tuning in. I hope that was a fan favorite. Coming up will actually be an interview that I did with Austin Klein that's going to be on Thursday, which will be a free bonus show because this whole month, while we do the book plug, will be a free month. All you have to do is put up with my pitch that each show. But that's it. That's like a month of pitches, and you get like twice the radio shows. So that's pretty cool, right?
Nice.
All right, with that, my name is Jacob Fortan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.